This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball game is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Sauce after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
If you want to get on the conversation, call or text into the Morning Rush at 877-377-6963. Let's go to the phone lines. Danny is in Russellville. What's going on, Danny?
Good morning, guys. Do you think the mad scientist is really going to be a cultural fit in Starkville?
Well, let me ask you this, Danny. Who is a cultural fit in Starkville? Like, is there a guy that is?
Like Sam Pittman. Okay, I think he fits Arkansas pretty good.
For sure, yeah.
He fits just like a glove.
I think even Lane Kiffin fits at Ole Miss because he's kind of that partier frat guy.
They hotty totty. He's probably going to love it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But the leak coming from the Pac-12. You guys mentioned it. He's getting into a whole different world, as we know. The SEC West. That's just as tough as it gets. Guys, is there any doubt that Reggie Chaney is in the doghouse?
If you listen to Eric Musselman's press conference he had yesterday at hittheline.com, I you can tell that he definitely got frustrated, but I think he approached it more as just saying, hey, it happens in basketball. Not saying it's right, not saying that it's not going to be addressed and not going to be talked about and fixed, but I don't think he's dwelling on the fact he's like, hey, he just had a lapse in judgment. That's not who he is. It's not what he does. Now, if there had been times where Reggie Chaney kept having issues with losing his cool in games, that'd be one thing. But I feel like this was just kind of an exception to the rule, if you will. And Eric Musselman understands that. And
I think he was frustrated because he picked up four fouls in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's what he's more frustrated about, right?
We need Reggie Chaney to get in there and play, and like a 6'7" guy. We just don't have any height. Before I get off here, I want to ask you guys about KJ Jefferson. Do you think that he's going to be accurate enough to be the starter? We really don't know. He's not particularly fast. He's big. He's not Lamar Jackson running around and making everybody miss. He's going to get you 6-7 yards, but his success is going to be his accuracy. And what we've seen of him, we haven't seen his accuracy. And I do believe Arkansas needs to bring in some more quarterbacks. I don't want to go this revolving door, but we've got to have somebody that's accurate. Guys, and you got a great show, and thanks.
Hey, appreciate it, as always, Danny. The KJ Jefferson angle, since you brought it up, here's my thing about it, is as of right now, if you had to put a gun to my head and say, who's starting quarterback for Arkansas in 2020, I'm saying KJ Jefferson.
Yeah.
Why? Because he's the best quarterback on this roster right now.
Of the current options,
right?
Who's better
now if they get a transfer, grad transfer, whatever, then we start changing some things, but as of right now, he's the guy. And here's the other thing, Danny, you talked about not being able to see a whole lot from him. It's maybe not the exact greatest example, but do you remember the difference of quarterback that Casey Dick was, Tommy, between Houston Nutt to Bobby Petrino? Mm-hmm. Just that one year, do you remember how Casey Dick went from being more of just a hander offer, if you will, to Darren McFadden?
Yeah.
To actually becoming a quarterback that could make some plays and ended up making one of the biggest plays, if not the biggest play of that season, with the Miracle on Markham Part 2. That's all came down to coaching and having an offseason of coaching and helping. Now, I'm not saying that Kendall Briles is going to step right in and be Bobby Petrino and just have that impact, but I am wanting to see what these quarterbacks, specifically KJ Jefferson, can be with actual competent quarterback coaching. Because none of the quarterbacks have had that since Dan Enos left campus. Not a one. So who knows what KJ Jefferson's actually capable of. If Kendall Brown steps in, sees the potential, is like, I like this guy. I can work with this guy. Go through spring practice, go through summer workouts, go through fall camp, does all of those things. Who knows what KJ Jefferson may turn into a quarterback. You're like, wow, this is a big time playmaker. We just don't know. Yeah. I just want to see what can happen when he actually has coaching.
And, we're seeing it in basketball right now. I mean, you talk about players and a difference. Adriel Bailey was a player we brought up yesterday and talking about the transformation and the difference in the development of Adriel Bailey. Why can't you see something like that? I mean, that's what I'm excited to see. That's why you pay these guys $1 million or more a year as coordinators to make differences, particularly in key positions. So, yeah, why not? You know, so that's got to happen in order to give this team a chance. We keep going back to, well, the offensive line's been the problem. Well, offensive line may be a problem for another year. I think it'll be better this year. They're going to have to get a year of recruiting to get some players in, develop the ones they have. The line will be better this year just because they're going to get coaching and development. Still not going to be where it needs to be to defend and to stop a lot of these SEC defensive lines. But you improve that and you improve your quarterback, and that's going to make a win or two difference just right there, I believe.
Yeah, because well, that was actually the point I was going to bring up too, is that I'm not saying that running back and wide receiver can't improve. I'm not saying that. But you feel comfortable as far as personnel of where you're going to be in 2020 at running back with Rakeem Boyd coming back. And at wide receiver with Treylon Burks and Trey Knox and some other guys that are getting mixed in there as well. You feel comfortable with that. The tight end position, maybe not so much because you lost Grayson Gunter. He transfers out. It's, you know, Cheyenne O'Grady, that whole fiasco. But what you point to is like, but you have Hudson Henry. I mean, if he was anything, if he's a shade of what Hunter Henry was at Arkansas, he'll be a big-time player, and I still think he will. So you feel at least there's potential there at tight end. But it comes down to offensive line and quarterback. I would bet my bottom dollar that offensive line is going to be leaps and bounds improved this season. But I also agree with you. I'm not saying it's going to be all world-beating. It's not going to be going from last in the SEC to first, but it's going to be leaps and bounds better. You're going to have a center that can get the ball to the quarterback in a timely manner. We can make those guarantees.
Yep.
And if the quarterback position can improve as well, it's going to make all the difference in the world and make this offense look competent, because as much as the quarterback is important, which it is, most important position on the offense, if it doesn't have a line protecting him, but then have a center that's able to get him the ball in a timely manner, it throws everything off.
It all starts up front.
Yeah. So if they can get those improved, there's no reason why this offense can't really make some noise because of some of the playmakers that they have this upcoming season. So I believe that Kendall Briles is capable of that. I'm just going to be curious of what he thinks when he starts looking at KJ Jefferson. They're going to add a quarterback. We had Richard Davenport on the show yesterday. They're going to add a quarterback. But is Kendall Briles going to step in and say, KJ, you know, we need another year with you before we really feel comfortable with you? Or is he going to step in and say, man, this guy is electric. I want to put together some packages for him. I mean, it's going to be what Kendall Briles evaluates from him. And I know that Sam Pittman is ultimately the head coach, but I'm sure it's going to be the decision of somebody like Kendall Briles to say, let's go get somebody else or let's stick with what we got.
How much of the film from last year with KJ Jefferson's even of value?
Burn it. Don't even look at it. Look at your high school tapes.
Exactly. With the positions and the offense and the plays that this coaching staff last year was putting Jefferson and this team in. I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying that to hammer Chad Morris and his staff. I'm just saying that
I am.
How much value is there in that? To really see, here's what KJ Jefferson could do.
None. And, you know, and I say it only half jokingly, Tommy, the past two seasons, any film needs to be wiped from any sort of memory for any of these coaches. They don't need to look at it, because I felt that, especially offensively, the ineptitude on the offense and the ineptitude of the lack of coaching on the offense, you can't look at these players and say, that's what you get. I just don't see that. I don't think you can look at even the wide receivers like Treylon Burks, maybe you could look at, because you're like, man, this guy's a freak. He's so good. I mean, he could do any position, it seems like. Rakeem Boyd, same thing. You could probably look at him and be like, oh, man, this guy's a game breaker. I don't think Sam Pittman and his staff need to even look at this offensive line and say, this is what we're getting with this guy. Don't even look at that film. Evaluate him from what you see with your eyes. Same thing with the quarterback position, too. If I'm Kendall Briles, I'm not looking at a single snap of KJ Jefferson last year. I'm not. I'm looking at his high school film. I'm going to talk to him, some of his high school coaches, guys that coached him then, and find out what this guy truly is all about and what he's made of and what he's capable of. I that's the route I'm taking, because I just feel like last year and the year before, and you can just say this with a lot of different players, it was just completely and totally evident. I think it would be unfair to that particular player to have it looked at from that perspective. And again, I don't know what the coaching staff's going to do, but that's just how I would handle it.
Clay will be with us in about 20 minutes. I know he believes KJ Jefferson has the ability to be a generational type player here at Arkansas. So I believe that's kind of what he said.
That's a bold statement too.
Well, I mean, I'm not putting words in Clay's mouth, though. That's what
he totally said that.
He has said that and made comparisons to the style of a Cam Newton.
Right.
That style of player.
The style. Make sure the player, the style.
The style of what Cam Newton did at all. And we're not saying Clay never said that. The style of what you saw with Cam Newton is what he believes KJ Jefferson can become.
Right.
Does Kendall Briles, Sam Pittman, this offensive staff see that, and is that potential there? You know, could they mold that around there? Because if he is truly a generational type talent here, if that's really there, that's how you turn this thing around, like in a year or two versus a 4 or 5 year rebuilding job here.
Mm-hmm.
Because it all starts with that one position.
Right. And
if he's that good, it'll cover up a lot of other sins.
Yeah, and that's the intrigue that I have with this offense is Kendall Briles and KJ Jefferson. What's that relationship going to be like? Mm-hmm. What can he do? Because he's coached some good quarterbacks. He's coached some great offenses. He's been able to make these quarterbacks, even if they weren't the most highly talented, highly regarded kids coming out of high school, in a lot of cases, he turned them into some pretty dadgum good football players. What can he do with KJ Jefferson? What can he do with those wide receivers and those big bodies that they have? What can he do with Rakeem Boyd? What can he do with Hudson? Like, that's what I want to see, because I have felt for two straight seasons, which this is a weird thing, Tommy, because if you think about the offenses that Arkansas has had just this past decade, these past 10 years, you had Bobby Petrino, which we all know the offensive mastermind that he was. After Bobby Petrino, you had Jim Chaney for 2 years, which, I mean, I know that people weren't very big fans of him, but he was still an SEC-caliber offensive coordinator. And then after that, you had Dan Enos, which I think was very undervalued and underrated as an OC at Arkansas. I mean, look what he did with Brandon Allen in that 1 year. Yeah. And then Austin Allen. I mean, I thought he was phenomenal. And then he went from all that to what you saw these past 2 years. And honestly, Arkansas not only has struggled without having a competent quarterback, but without having a competent offensive coordinator / offensive coach. So now that you got a guy that's proven to be able to turn offenses around in Kendall Briles, he's proven that.
Mm-hmm.
Can Arkansas get that offense in year one? Because that's what we're talking about. Obviously, we feel good about the long term, but in year one, do they have enough pieces to turn it around immediately and make it into a competent offense in the SEC? I think they have the talent to do so. I really do.
I mean, obviously the challenge is the defenses you play in this league are world-class as far as college football. I mean, it's just the best of the best in college football are on your schedule week in, week out in this league. And that's the difficulty in trying to rebuild your offense is you got to do it against the LSUs and the Alabamas and the front lines of Auburn and teams of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's tough on a young quarterback. It's tough on freshmen and sophomore linemen that haven't played a lot to go up against All-American defensive tackles and nose guards. So, but that's the challenge of the SEC.
Yep. And it's not running away. It's not going to change.
Nope.
It's not going to be like, oh, boy, I hope we get lucky this year and everybody sucks in on the defense here in the SEC. No, that's it's not how it works.
Nope.
That's never going to change. So it's just a fact of the matter. And as I brought up in the quick-hitting headlines, another good thing is that Arkansas and Sam Pittman, they have a 5-star offensive lineman visiting this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
A 5-star, not 4-star, a 5-star, bona fide 5-star offensive lineman visiting this week, and he's currently committed to Georgia, but with the relationship he has with Sam Pittman, might change. But just imagine what one single Tommy, five-star offensive lineman, assuming that he's evaluated and he's that high caliber, can do for this offensive line as a freshman. Can make a difference.
Are you trying to make healthier choices in 2020 when it comes to your diet and making it maybe a little more difficult for you when you're eating out? Hey, you can still go to Art's Barbecue and Burgers and get some healthy choices on the menu. I was in there the other day. They got a lot of salad options and a lot of good dressing options.
Did you get it?
I did.
Oh, wow. Hey, how
had the chef salad. I'll tell you why I love their salads. And like the chef salad there is covered with all the smoked meat. So they smoke the ham and the turkey, cover that salad with that, and that makes it outstanding because you can still get a little bit of the smoked flavor inside a salad. So a lot of great healthy options there. Smoked chicken on the menu as well that melts in your mouth with great choices of sides as well and vegetable choices, a variety of, like we said, salads to choose from. And it's always a great choice when you use the waiter app to have any of the delicious food brought to you by Art. So stop in and see them for some healthy options at Art's Barbecue and Burgers to start off 2020 the right way. So don't think you can't go to Art's because you're trying to eat healthy. They got all the healthy choices at Art's Barbecue and Burgers on Rogers Avenue next to Aaron's.
A few people texting into the Morning Rush. We got Doug and Sherwood who says, Arkansas has Pittman, Briles, and Odom. We have the super team of coaches at Arkansas right now. You know what? And I know we've been talking about Mike Leach and how fascinating it is and Lane Kiffin and all of that. Maybe it's my rose-colored glasses, tinted, whatever you say, the old adage. Mm-hmm. But
rose-colored glasses.
That sounds good to me. But honestly, I'm still happy with Arkansas's choice. Maybe that's just because it's Arkansas. I'm still happy with the route they went, knowing the type of staff that Sam Putman has put together. I'd mm-hmm. rather take this staff than what Lane Kiffin has over at Ole Miss right now. I'll take this staff over what Eli Drinkwitz has in Missouri. We don't know who Mike Leach is going to hire as far as his staff goes, and he's been a much more established head coach, but I'm taking Arkansas staff right now over what Mississippi State has. That doesn't mean it's going to be better than those teams year in and year out. Let's just be honest. But I still feel like Arkansas is in good hands and they're in a good situation.
I don't disagree at all. And for Arkansas, the key immediately is to beating the Mississippi schools. You know, when you are respectable in this conference, in many of the Houston Nutt seasons, you were beating Ole Miss and Mississippi State. That's where you've got to get back to, is you've got to be competitive in this league. For Arkansas, we're not talking about trying to win the West right away, but to just in the next couple of years, beat Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and Missouri. And there's three. That gets you on your way. You can go get one else, you know, somewhere, another toss-up game. You got four. You know, beat them a once won five here in the SEC.
During a very highly competitive SEC West.
After losing, that was the same year as losses to Toledo and Texas Tech. Think what that season could have been.
Yeah.
Five SEC wins. So, I mean, five's not good enough in Tuscaloosa. Five's not good enough in Baton Rouge. Five's not good enough in SEC play in Auburn, Alabama. But five here, well, if you could just, right now, you just like to get back to averaging four.
I'd take three right now.
Well, yeah, we would, because you've had zero. You're averaging zero. Just don't think we understand the difficulty sometimes of just getting four.
Yeah.
And just going 500. How difficult that is.
Yeah, and it gets frustrating.
But you can't do it unless you beat these schools we're talking about with Kiffin and Leach as the head coach.
Yeah, and it gets frustrating, I know, for Razorback fans to hear, especially from some of the national media and college football. Like yesterday when Mike Leach was hired, they were poking fun at Arkansas because they're like, ooh, Nick Saban, Ed Orgeron, Jimbo Fisher, Gus Malzahn, Mike Leach, Lane Kiffin, and some guy at Arkansas. It was almost like they kept saying, "Yeah, one's not like the others," mm-hmm. because yeah, it's Sam Pittman. And you know what? That's them just being cheeky. And I get it frustrates you as a Razorback fan, but I'm telling you, folks, do not base your coaching hire, especially based on what social media reaction is, because as we found out in this report of when Mike Leach got hired in Mississippi State, their athletic director and their administration used social media reaction studies to base this hire on. That's not a joke. They wanted to know the reaction of social media and the buzz it would cause by hiring Mike Leach. It came back positive, and that was one of the factors that they brought into hiring him.
Unfortunately, that's the world we live in. While you say that kind of disparagingly, as why would you use that management approach, or I won't call it a management style, I get it. Because social media can kill you anymore from a public relations standpoint.
If you listen to it.
Well, but the problem is like if you're running a restaurant over here, you know, one bad review could seem to do you in anymore on social media. You know, you have to take all this stuff serious because people read this stuff, whatever it is, whether it's a restaurant or whether it's a football coach or what, and they think it's credible because they don't know who actually typed it. Could have just been some buffoon like me or you. and then it snowballs. Yeah, so, I mean, I understand why someone in a position like that would want to know what the social media reaction would be to this kind of hire.
Mm-hmm. But, Tommy, at the end of the day, the restaurants are not basing it on reviews. They're basing it on the money, the business that they're running. That's how they measure their success.
Yeah, but they can't get the money if they're getting bad reviews on social media because people don't go there.
I understand. But at the end of the day, coaches are about winning. And if they get to the wins, social media doesn't even matter. Nick Saban's not on social media.
The problem is social media becomes reality. It's perception. It's a perception of your program. That's the problem. It may not be the reality. Just like you may read a bad review on a restaurant, that may not be the reality. They may have the best chicken Alfredo you've ever eaten in your life, but their competitors have put a gazillion reviews on how horrible it is. Yeah. Saw cockroaches in there. Mm-hmm. All these horrible things that aren't true. And the problem is the perception becomes the reality. Unfortunately, because we all live with our heads buried in our phones anymore, social media's reaction is the perception that has become the reality and what we perceive, which influences everything from donations to recruiting, on and on and on. So, yeah, social media's reaction to any hire in college sports is important now.
Mm-hmm. But
paramount.
I'm just saying it shouldn't be. I agree.
I don't disagree with you.
I just say it shouldn't be. But here's a great tweet before we get out of here real quick. Travis Swanson, he was poking some fun at everybody. He was trashing on Arkansas. And I'll read the tweet later. I have to take some explanation. But the point is that Razorback fans, don't worry what the national media says. Only worry about the results that come in.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, available in black cherry, strawberry, lemon lime, and mango.
Give is to Alex Collins, straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas, 80 yards.
Also want to remind everybody that since we've been talking Razorback football a lot too, Arkansas basketball taking on Ole Miss tomorrow down there in Oxford, needing a bounce back game. And Clay, I know that you were able to check out the LSU game too down there in Baton Rouge. That's a tough loss for Arkansas to have. I mean, the rebounding and the offensive rebound, especially for LSU, was just the difference maker. It's going to make me interested to see how Eric Musselman gets his team ready for Ole Miss. Not to say that they'll have another rebounding performance or lack thereof against Ole Miss, but they certainly cannot have or afford to have another game that goes that way and expect to get out of there with a victory, especially on the road.
Yeah, they just need one more guy. I mean, one more forward. And can it be Reggie Chaney? Can it be Silla? Can it be Ethan Henderson? I mean, they didn't need a whole lot more. I mean, the game was so close. You know, two or three defensive rebounds here or there make a huge difference. If they can just get one of their bigs to contribute a little bit. And what you don't want to do is stick one of those guys in that takes away from the offensive chemistry or can't cover. And by that, I mean, you know, they're switching defense and being able to cover a guard. That's what they've got on defense now, is that they stay between their men in most cases, even on switches. And their defensive field goal percentage in that game on their first shots was about 20%. But, you know, then it skyrockets when they get the rebound and get a put back. You know, you go from, you know, from 0% to 50% on that possession. I think everybody can do that math. But it's not unlike what I was expecting. I mean, it's I knew this team was going to struggle with their height, and they ran into a perfect storm. They ran up against an elite athletic team, and I was interested. They've been getting all the loose ball quicker to everybody, but LSU's athleticism, they were one step quicker to loose balls, and that, you know, a lot of times a defensive rebound is just chasing the ball down. And LSU was better than they were, and that won't be the case against everybody. And I, you know, they almost got it, but it's the good is that I love Eric Musselman. I think that they play so hard, and they will get that fixed as far as somewhat defensive rebound, where they won't be so lopsided. And you know, the other part about the game that was always a concern to me is what would happen with foul trouble. And, you know, they lost, I think that Isaiah Joe played 9 minutes in the first half. He came out with two fouls. And they did well in that stretch, but it kind of put a cap on him, and he wasn't in rhythm to start the second half. And that played a big part in. But, boy, I want to tell you, they didn't get very many stops on defense. And I'm talking about get out of the position without giving up some points. You know, they got stops, but then they wouldn't get the defensive rebound. And LSU scored on a lot of possessions. Their offensive efficiency per possession in the second half was incredible. And to think that you had a chance in the game if you get a foul call at the end. And I think if Joe wasn't fouled, then Desi Sills certainly was fouled. You still have to make the free throws. But I take my chances with either one of those guys at the foul line.
Is this the blueprint? Did we see a blueprint on how to beat Arkansas if you have the players in the matchups?
This year.
This year? I mean, I think that was, you know, if you're the team that can put those kind of players, even if they're not your front, you know, your frontline starters, maybe that's the type of team you want to put on the floor if you're on Arkansas' schedule to neutralize some of Arkansas' strengths.
Yeah, I think what the other aspect to that is that if it's not your frontline player, they're probably going to melt as far as turnovers against this defensive pressure. They better be skilled guys that are also athletic. So the not everybody in the league has that combination of athleticism plus ball handlers in LSU's really good, and I'm telling you, they're going to win a lot of games. And but you know, the thing that's amazing to me is that you look at this team and they've lost three games, could have won. You know it's that they could be undefeated right now.
And there's really only one game they've won they maybe should have lost, and that'd be Georgia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Yeah, that was true. And so I guess you trade that one for the Western Kentucky game. Yeah. Maybe I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying that they haven't had a lot of great breaks. Nope. Hadn't been a lot of games where it's only really been one. They've had to have some good fortune to have a chance to win. That'd be Georgia Tech. Other than that, they've been more than good enough to win the games they've won. So
yeah, we'll see how they bounce back from this one. And boy, you know, Eric had his jaw set yesterday when he was talking, and you know, going to Ole Miss is still, you know, that's a tough get. I mean, they'll have to earn that one down there. Ole Miss does a lot of things well, and they play really hard with Kermit Davis, and they you know, it's going to be a real intense battle just by the way that they play defense and the way Arkansas plays defense.
I heard Tom Hart on with Phil Elson and Ty Richardson yesterday, and they were talking about the shoot-around that Jimmy Dykes was referencing on Twitter and how detailed of a practice it was to prepare the team. And they got some details that I thought was interesting because, you know, these guys as TV commentators get to go to a lot of, you know, day-before-game practices, whether it's baseball, football, basketball. They see a lot of things that, you know, normal day-to-day media that cover a team, we're not invited to. We're not allowed into these type of settings. And Tom Hart was describing this, Clay, and guys, I thought this was interesting. They take these poster boards and then they put the strengths and the weaknesses and the scouting report on a particular player, and they're placed around the floor in the spot they're going to be, and as they work through the practice, you know, and the walkthrough, you know, the spot on the floor where you're looking to defend or work against this type of player, there's that poster.
And there's Skylar Mays, and it lists all the things.
Exactly. Yeah. And they do this, and he was talking, this is something he brought from the NBA, and it's nothing new. This isn't something he's invented with Musselman. It's something he said he's been doing for years.
Yeah, you're basically taking the whiteboard to the floor.
Right.
And Jimmy Dykes explained it pretty well during the game. And, you know, he and I exchanged text yesterday, and I thought Jimmy was fantastic in the descriptions that he gave and the explanations. And, you know, his kind of last little text to me yesterday morning was, Eric Musselman is the real deal. And I don't think there's any doubt of that. And, you know, they've got big guys coming. Now, you know, this combination of guards may not be here next year. You know, Mason Jones has got another year, but I'd be stunned if he's not, you know, somewhere in pro basketball next year. He's that kind of a talent, and everywhere he goes, there's three or four NBA scouts. So it might be a different type team, but you know that Eric Musselman is going to figure out how to get his dudes on the field and how to get them to play together and understand how best to maximize their talent and get great effort on defense. And he doesn't miss a beat. Everything about him looks coached, and it is intense coaching for 40 minutes. And I just imagine that when he's got him, there's always something that he's throwing to him, trying to push buttons and maximize the talent that he's got this year. They're going to lose some more games. They're not going to roll through the SEC. That, you know, they're too small, and you know they've got certain deficiencies at certain positions, but they've got some guys, you know, those role players, they all do something well, and he figures out, you know, how to patch that together, and that's what coaching to me is.
Well, and Clay, to confirm that to me, the coaching aspect of it all is so apparent because the majority of this team, and especially the two best players on this team, these aren't Eric Musselman guys. These aren't guys that Eric Musselman went out, sought after, recruited, built the relationship, saw their games. Like, yeah, I like what they can add. I like how they can fit in my coaching philosophy. And I plucked them in, and they're working. These are guys where he stepped in, and they were there. And he's like, all
except
right.
Except for Jimmy Witt.
Well, yeah, right. Majority.
And Jimmy, and do not understand what Jimmy Witt means to this team. And he was the glue guy in the middle of that second half and got some big baskets.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
But I agree with you, John, and I think that's a good point. And I will also add with that, I give Mike Anderson a lot of credit for recruiting some talent. They were all just puppies last year. You know, too many freshmen, too many young players with Daniel Gafford. But he taught them how to work hard. So when Musselman got here, they were easy. They were easy to mold because they weren't afraid to work. That right. was not a culture shock to go from, you know, Mike Anderson's work at completely different practices, completely different style, but you knew they were willing to play hard, and they have for Eric Musselman. So I give Mike credit for bringing in these players, and Joe is an incredible talent. But, yeah, I think that's a good point, John.
Well, and just what I was going to add to that is that, you know, not only did he come in and do it, but he saw that I can work with these specific things on these guys. And even a guy like Adrio Bailey, I think, is a prime example, a senior that
has improved
leaps and bounds from last year.
The best player development they've got to point to right now.
I mean, because, you know, he's having to play post, and he's not a post guy. I mean, he's just not big enough, but he's doing a fair job of it. And it's just the whole excitement and the whole aspect of it all is like, if he's doing this, if Eric Musselman is being able to step into a program of guys that he did not recruit for the most part, step in and change them into a team that more than likely is going to make the NCAA tournament in year one when they couldn't even do it last year with an NBA draft pick on their team and Daniel Gafford. If he can do that, what can he do with his players and these highly recruited players, especially coming in on 2020 class? What can he do with those guys when they're all on the team at the same time? I mean, it just seems like there is no limitations. There's no ceiling to what he could do.
I agree 100%. Now, I will say this. Bailey defensively is more in his element under Musselman playing the post than he was playing forward under Mike. And I say that because he grew up as a post player. That's what he was in high school. And he's been playing against more athletic, you know, threes and fours the last 3 years. And he's more comfortable on the block than he is, I'm talking about defensively, than he is anywhere else. So that was kind of a godsend for him in his defense. And he also understands how to step out and, you know, and stay in front of a guard because he's got that kind of athletic ability. But without question, he's got more confidence in his shot. And just like yesterday, Eric said, hey, we're going to start giving him more freedom on the threes. He hasn't taken very many, but he makes them when he takes them.
Football Friday brought to you by Harry Robinson Buick GMC and Harry Robinson Salisaw Ford, 1 mile south of exit 308 off I-40 in Salisaw. 2019 Ford Expeditions, all the room and the options you want, and it's the all-new body style, now $15,000 off through this month. So you can't miss these deals. If you want a 2019 Ford Expedition, you got a limited amount of time, and they got less than 9 of these remaining at Harry Robinson Salisaw Ford. 1 mile south of exit 308 off I-40 in Salisaw.
And the thing is, too, continuing on to talk about Eric Musselman, this basketball team, Clay, is that, you know, the fact that if you would have told me before the year started that at this point in time Arkansas was going to be 12-2 and 1-1 in SEC play, I honestly wouldn't believe it. And it had nothing to do with the incapabilities of Eric Musselman. It just had to do with, well, I just don't know if they have enough talent. You know, they don't have a bench that's deep enough. And as we've seen in some of the minutes that some of these players are playing, they don't need the deep bench to win these games. Now, again, they're not going to win them all. And I'm sure that he would love to have some guys step up when you have to get 7 to 10 minutes in a game, when you got to get a breather to some of these guys. But, I mean, Jimmy Witt played 40 minutes in the LSU game. He played every minute. And we've seen other instances where these players have played 38, 39, 40 minutes. The fear that Razorback fans have, whether it's right or wrong, and whether it actually comes to fruition or not, is at the end of conference play, heading into postseason play, is this team physically still going to be in good shape given how many minutes that these guys are having to play each and every game, week in and week out? That's going to be the key.
That's a big question mark for this week's game at Ole Miss, because Ole Miss has one more day than Arkansas, and for Arkansas to be two travel days. This is the tough week of the season, and if they can somehow get a victory at Ole Miss, I will say that this start at 2-1 would be a major success.
Yep.
But they could be 1-2. They're in any doubt, and it's, you know, and then the but they've had some good scheduling breaks, that they've had a lot of periods where they play a game, then they had a week, play a game, then have a week. And that allows you to get your legs back. And we'll see if they have their legs and see if, you know, how strong they are physically in this Ole Miss game. I bet they're fine, but it, you know, I want to see it before I know for sure.
They have one more stretch of back-to-back road games, but it's a Saturday to a Tuesday on different weeks. So February 8th on a Saturday after playing Auburn on the 4th, third home. That Saturday they go to Missouri. Then that they turn around and play the following Tuesday at Tennessee. So that's the only other, as I look through the schedule time past this stretch, that they play back-to-back road games. But it's not like this where –
it's a little more forgiving.
A little bit more, but, you know, because, you know, on this one, you're playing Wednesday night and Saturday in the same week on the road. Those, I mean, it's really kind of the same kind of days if you'll look at it, but there's just something about when it breaks over into a different week, it feels different.
The only thing good right now, there's no classes. They're not in school right now. Yeah. So they're not climbing up and down those hills to go to classes.
Yeah, and they're not having to fly to Columbia, South Carolina either. I mean, they're going to Oxford, Mississippi, and they were in Baton Rouge, of course, earlier in the week. Still traveling, but it's not like they're having to go really far on a trip like that.
They don't take a bus?
I don't know. Do they?
No.
No. Okay. No, they're in plane.
They're in plane.
They're chartered.
Yeah.
I was
kidding.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I assumed, no. But I was like, yeah. Hey, I had to take a bus when I went down there. So, and I mean, my eyes just as important.
You may
important.
Still take a bus the next time you go.
I may have to.
Hey, yeah. John's middle name was Graham.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the only time I ever went was to go to an SEC football game. But that's a key that I think people have to take into consideration, and especially given the fact that with the amount of minutes these guys are playing, I think Eric Musselman always puts it as like, hey, these guys are young. You know, they can play these amount of minutes per game. And I believe he's right, and I believe they can. But, you know, when we talk about next year, and he adds some more depth into the positions, you have some guys that become eligible, like a Connor Vanover. You know, does he start switching it up where maybe he takes some guys out of games and gets some bench guys in there a little more? Does the minutes start diminishing because he has the ability? I guess my whole question is he playing these guys this many minutes because he has to, or is he doing it because he wants to?
Yeah, I think that his tendency has been to play a small core of guys. I mean, if you go back, he's never been an 8, 9, 10 guy, you know, like Mike Anderson. And you earn your time, and he wants it to – if you play well, you're going to stay out there. And his best guys are going to get the most minutes. And I don't think there's any question about that. And we'll see, though. I mean, it's the more guys that you got that can play, yeah. I mean, it's I think he is a guy a little bit like Eddie Sutton that you earn your time with your practice play, and they're not playing full court, so that you're not extending that 94 feet, which is much tougher. And I watched Eddie Sutton play 7-8 guys, and you didn't have all the extended media timeouts the way they do now. In fact, Nolan told me that his system would not have benefited from the current, modern day 2.5 minute media timeouts scattered throughout the games like they have now. So there's ways to rest them, and I don't know that you're going to see them play 8 or 9 too much.
The key is, I think, also how you practice. And we've talked to Eric Musselman about this. We've all talked about this on the show. They don't do a lot of 5-on-5, hardly any in practice. It's a lot of 3-on-3. It's a lot of half-court work. And that's where you can really wear someone down in the course of the seasons. It's not the games. It's the practices and what you do in between. And I think they do a good job of managing what they take out of the players physically in practices as well.
Well, and another thing too, Tommy, is that Eric Musselman has made it very apparent and very known, especially with his assistant coaches, that he likes to run these programs and to run his practices like NBA teams. And last time I checked, the NBA, they play a lot more games, mm-hmm. have a lot more travel days, and they don't have as many days off in between games. I mean, it's that's how the setup is, and they play 48 minutes a game.
Yeah, and the practices are walkthroughs.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
And the travel's worse.
So if he's treating it like NBA practices and NBA drills, I'm sure that's also what's a benefit too, where he's not treating it as, let's run these guys out all the time. He's treating them as scouting reports, walkthroughs, as Clay says. He's going about it in that way to make sure that he does have his guys fully rested, where the games is where you put in all your energy and all your effort and you push yourself to the maximum. It's just a matter of going through the season and knowing your guys, knowing how far you can push them, and knowing exactly where they're at with their health and making sure that you don't get too fatigued as the season
what
goes
do we,
on.
Yeah. What do we
see what happens when February rolls around? It's still, we've got it. There's 2 or 3 of these guys that are playing big minutes, and it's Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe. Unless they're in foul trouble, they're not coming out very long. Yeah. I mean, you might see them get a 4-minute rest, but it's only a minute on the clock. I mean, it's before a timeout, media timeout, and then maybe for a little bit after a media timeout, and they. It was 4 minutes to sit down, but not very long as far as the clock on the scoreboard.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, gluten-free with no artificial flavors.
Now he does a tightrope back. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're at number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs!
We've been discussing, of course, the big news that hit college football, specifically in the SEC, of Mike Leach being hired at Mississippi State and joining in the SEC West. And it's pretty incredible that Arkansas is going to be facing 3 new head coaches next year on their schedule. In fact, all 3 new head coaches from the SEC besides Arkansas are all on Arkansas' schedule. So it's going to be fascinating to see not only how the schedule plays out, but how the West plays out as well. But the big question and the big thing that everyone's been talking about, because everyone loves rankings, right? You love to be ranked. You love to be seeing where you rank, how close you are. And when people are putting out their coaching ranks of SEC West coaches, Sam Pittman's on the bottom. And honestly, I can't disagree with it only because Sam Pittman is the only person in the SEC West that's never been a head coach before. I mean, obviously, Nick Saban, I still have his number one. Ed Orgeron has got to be number two. Tommy, I think when we went through Malzahn, you had Malzahn at three, Jimbo at four, kind of throwing it out there.
Man, I think Orgeron's elevated himself to number two.
Yeah.
Clay, you got any issue with that with Saban one, Orgeron two?
No, we're just talking about the West,
just,
right?
Just the West division.
Yep.
I mean, I think Orgeron's put himself in this spot.
I think that you have to, I think what you have to do with Mississippi State, wait and see what Leach does as far as staff goes. And, you know, does he have more money, you know, for his assistant coaching pool at Starkville than he did at Pullman, which I think is true. But it's still, I like Pittman's staff, though. I mean, when you think about Kendall Briles and Barry Odom is coordinators, and then you go all the way through the staff and see the experience and their recruiting ability. I'm not trading what Arkansas did with Mississippi State and Ole Miss and Missouri. Those are the new coaches. I would not trade Sam Pittman because I think it's a fit, and it's about fit. And we don't know how these other guys are going to fit. Well, I tell you what, Kiffin at Oxford does not seem like a fit. And, what I know about the Pac-12 was that it was a zone defensive league more than anything else. And Leach is coming into a man-to-man league. Great corners, great press coverage. And just think about this. Right out of the chute next year in October, he plays in a row. I'm talking about Leach. Texas A&M, at Alabama, at LSU and Auburn. That's a four-week stretch. I don't know if he looked at that when he he told them, yes, the pirate ship's sailing to Starkville. Now, there's no way to get a pirate ship to Starkville. And maybe they just build one, on dry land so he gets to play around.
Covered wagon would be the only way, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what's funny about this, and Donnie just actually texted it in, I think it's a good point, is that the three, what?
I mean, this video of Leach getting off the plane, shaking the cowbells, it got near 1.7 million views.
Yeah.
I mean, just that to me, just the 1.7 million views in that short amount of time is incredible.
Well, I mean, it just shows you.
And again, since 4 o'clock yesterday,
the reaction of social media. And as Donnie texted in, he says that, all three new SEC coaches that Arkansas is going to be going up against were all legitimate candidates, at least at one point in time, for the Arkansas job. Lane Kiffin.
They were all on the list that when I wrote a column the week after Morse was fired and said, here's what's out there. They were all mentioned.
Yep.
I mentioned every one of them.
Yep. And I think that's an interesting angle too, because you're going to go up against coaches that you're going to be familiar with. But Clay, I agree with you, because I said it in the 6 o'clock hour this morning that even though I wanted Mike Leach, I thought it was going to be a good hire. I will even admit that I wanted Lane Kiffin. I thought it was going to be a good hire. I was never on board with the Eli Drinkwitz deal. But Arkansas got Sam Pittman, and you can say it's biased. You can say it's my rose-colored glasses. However, but considering the staff that Sam Pittman has put together and considering that the recruiting and how they are getting out there and they are busting it, try to get some of these big-time recruits, not only here in the region, but also just nationally, going to California, going to the East Coast, going and just wherever there's a good player, they're going to go find him. Seeing these things, I still would not trade Sam Pittman and what he's done with his staff with any of these other new coaches with their new staffs right now. I wouldn't. You're not going to have these national media guys. You're not going to have the SEC Network guys coming on and just saying how pumped they are about Sam Pittman, because you're going to have to hear it, Razorback fans, and I am just preparing you. You are going to have to hear it for the foreseeable future of you getting overlooked because your coach is not Mike Leach, your coach is not Lane Kiffin. They are going to just absolutely fall in love with the Egg Bowl and with these two coaches, and they want to talk about them, they want to hear from them, they want to play their sound bites, they want to do all that stuff. You're going to have to deal with that. But at the end of the day, all that matters is wins and losses. And I still like Arkansas's position and what they've done with Sam Pittman, and I will take that situation right now over what those other three schools have done here in this offseason.
Well, the key to what Arkansas needed was a revamped recruiting profile and practice regimen and weight room regimen to get things fixed in the offensive and defensive line. And that's not what's out there on social media. Nobody's talking about that. They're just talking about, do you win the soundbite? Do you win the press conference? Well, that's not what they need to win. What they need to win is in the trenches. And this staff and Sam Pittman are equipped to do that. And that's why it's a good fit.
I mean, I like the fit. I like how he under... Because here's the thing about Sam Pittman, too, when he was hired. The one skepticism that I had was, is he going to offensively bring in Jim Chaney and go through that same thing again and have this retread of an offense?
It was scary.
Because we didn't know. We didn't know what type of offense Sam Pittman was looking at. And I'm not to say it wouldn't be successful if they would have brought in a Jim Chaney or somebody like that, but it certainly wasn't. It was going to look like Sam Pittman was going what he was comfortable with more so than what he felt was going to be the best for the team and for the offense and for this conference. But Sam Pittman shocked it. So he shocked me in saying, no, I know what college football is like now. I know how the offense is played now. As much as I'm sure he'd like to have ground and pound, he understands that to be successful, especially in this conference, you have to have a Kendall Briles type of offensive coordinator and a Kendall Briles type of offense to be highly successful.
And relationship to Texas, yeah.
Yes, exactly. He understood that. So that tells me he's not going with what Sam Pittman's comfortable with. Not saying he wasn't comfortable with the hire, but he's not going with, you know, getting the old gang back together like some coaches like to do. He's going out and going and getting guys that he feels is going to put their position to be the best team that they possibly can be. And that's very hopeful, not only for now, but for the future. If one of these coaches have success and on moving on, he's going to go out and he's going to replace them with the next best option he can get.
Yeah, I mean, because the RPO's here to stay for now, at least. I mean, the NFL's trying to figure out how to take this. And it's one of the few things we've seen. Generally, things start at the top and work their way down, right? That's the way things have always worked, is someone in the NFL comes up with this grand idea on how to scheme something, and then everybody copies it in college and then down to high school. That's not how this RPO thing has went, guys. This RPO deal started in high school football and has worked its way up, and now the NFL's trying to figure it out. And that's how these offenses have transformed. It's really been about the time Bielema got on his feet here at Arkansas, everything offensively changed in the West, because that's when Saban changed.
The rules for the NFL, I believe, are a little more restrictive in the linemen downfield than what they've got in college football. I think you can be 3 yards downfield,
two.
Tommy.
I believe it's two.
Is it two?
Yeah.
In NFL, they don't want you past the neutral zone. I mean, it's just they're going to flag you for it. So it's a little more restrictive, but you can still do it.
Yeah, because I think that offensively, with what Arkansas recruited for over the past few years and what Kendall Briles is going to bring in and the Sam Pittman having the experience in the SEC, I think that that's vital because he's gone up against really good defenses in the SEC. And we know the SEC is known for its defenses, but he's also known that what type of offenses like Alabama, like what LSU's doing right now, what some other teams in this conference are doing to have success. He understands that that's what they have to do. I mean, it would be great, I'm sure, for him if he could have this, what kind of offenses 10, 15 years ago, if he could just line up an I formation with a fullback and run it down the throats and then have to rely on the passing game in third and long situations. I'm sure that that's be something that a lot of coaches would like to do because it's maybe a little easier. Maybe it's a little less risky. But if Sam Pittman and Kendall Briles can get on the same page with how their offensive line sets are going to be, what type of blocking schemes there's going to be, the type of players that they're going to recruit, and go after the strength and conditioning programs. I mean,
yep.
that's going to be the big key to how light do you want them? How heavy do you want them? How fast do you want them?
Morse trimmed them down too much up front on the line.
Exactly. Exactly. So all of these factors are going to be playing in, but I at least appreciate the approach that Sam Pittman is taking to saying, you know what, this is what I'm going want to do. And even if I'm not comfortable with it, I know that I'm going to have to force myself to be comfortable with and adjust to it because this is what works.
Got to have a plan. And, you know, Bielema was real strong on this, or spoke real strong when he was here about, you know, not flinching, the whole not flinch thing, you know, and having your plan and working your plan. And but that didn't work either. You know, you've got to figure out how to balance trying to develop your plan and recruiting to your plan while making what you have work to win some games. That's really what we're seeing Musselman do, right? I mean, I don't think that what Musselman's doing now is not what the finished product is. He's just trying to figure out how to win as many games as he can with what he has.
Yeah. So, I don't care what sport you play. Yeah. You better play defense. Musselman's got him playing defense. Dave Van Horn got him playing defense, pitching in defense in baseball. Yeah. Barry Odom, get him playing defense.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll be fine. I'm just telling you, you guys have talked about offense for 2 hours today. They've got to fix the secondary. They've got to fix the linebackers. They've got to be able to make more plays close to the line of scrimmage.
They got to stop a gap. They got to have some run stoppers in the middle.
I mean, and I think they're going to be fine. But it's still, that's the burning question. Do they have enough talent on defense to play in the SEC West? And they haven't for so many years. There was one year where that was the exception, and that was with Filon, Flowers, Mitchell, and Spate. That was the only time I can remember it in the last 15 years.
I know that defense is important, and I get that. But to me, offense is now starting to take precedent over defense in college
football. Never!
It is.
Never! 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 Never!
I know boomers don't want to hear that.
Never!
Defense wins championships.
Never!
Yeah. I'm telling you.
John, never!
Because in 2014...
Never!
In 2014... When Arkansas had that great defense, that was top 10. They went 6-6. When they had fantastic offenses, like they did in the days of Bobby Petrino, they won 9, 10, 11 games.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that, and I'm not saying defense is not important, so don't take that.
Petrino's defenses were just there for the convenience of the offense to have practice.
They were making sacks. Go back and look. Jake Beckett, I mean, they were hitting the quarterback.
Yeah. Well, no, and listen, I'm not saying that it's not important. Like, if you have a terrible defense and a great offense, you're not going to be a good team. I'm just saying that if I had to have a choice between having a great offense and a good defense or a good offense and a great defense, I'm taking a great offense, because at the end of the day, you got to score points. And the way the college football is set up, I look at LSU right now. Why is LSU in the national championship game, Tommy? Why are they in the championship game? It's because their offense or defense?
Their defense is pretty good, right?
Defense is good, but Joe Burrow.
But what? Yeah, their offense is what sets them apart from everybody else.
Joe Burrow and those wide receivers.
Yes. Yeah. So that's my point. And you get same thing with Oklahoma and the successes is that they have had in getting to the college football playoff. I know that they get blown out. They haven't won any games in the college football playoff. They still get there, though,
on offense. They still determine the winner with points.
Exactly right. And if you have more points, this just in, but if you have more points than the other team, you will win the game.
Part of that is stopping the other team from scoring.
And I completely agree. And again, I'm not saying defense is not important. I am just telling you that if I had to rate the level of importance, to me, offense is more important now in college football than defense. You got to have both. Everyone would love to have both. But you got to have a great offense if you want to win championships in college football.
No. It's equally as important. It is not more important. You just, special teams, defense are equally important as offense.
Well, I still think.
Not more important.
Well, again, I understand, but listen.
Just say they're equally important. Just say they're equally important.
But in college football, it's
John,
not set that way anymore,
equally
Clay.
Equally important.
It's not set that way where you can have elite defense and elite offense. It's just not. Like, you can't have both. You can have one great and one good. That's just the fact, because LSU's defense statistically is not good
this
year.
But if you're not good, you'll lose. promise.
And that's why I said.
If you want a good defense to practice against, you will lose if you can't play defense.
And that's why I'm saying that it's having a great offense with a good defense. That's the formula. You can't be great and great
equally
at the same
important.
Time.
Equally important.
I think there you can. There's different ways to skin a cat.
Here's the reality we have to come to terms with at Arkansas. There's just not many years where you have a great offense and great defense at the same time, or even an above average offense and defense at the same time. And that's, you know, maybe Sam Pittman can deliver that, but that's just not what we have seen. Sometimes you have one or the other, but oftentimes, you know, it's just Clay, there's just not very many years where you're above average on both sides of the ball. And you're right, it takes both.
Yeah, I think Georgia is and Clemson are the models that I would point to where great defense have carried them to the national championship semifinals. And I think that you are good on defense, it makes it so much easier. And I know maybe you don't see that, but defense has got to return at Arkansas, and that's I'm not saying they have to allow 8 points a game. You know, it doesn't have, but you can't be worst.
Yeah.
And that's where they've been. You can't give up 600 and something yards 4 out of 18 games.
Yeah. JT in Hot Springs texted in and said, "Hey, ask Oklahoma how not having a defense panned out."
Yeah, they play in the college football playoff. Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, and how'd that go?
Yeah. Okay, but they still were there. They still
because they
won the Big 12.
They didn't deserve to be there.
Okay, but they were there. So who would you have put?
Hey.
Who would you have put in there?
Well, I mean, I
would.
Certainly could have put Alabama in there ahead of them.
Yeah.
You would put a Pac-12 team in there?
I'm just telling you that the Oklahoma defense was a shell this year.
I don't disagree.
By the time they got to the championship game.
But if you told Arkansas fans that you're going to make it to the college football playoff, but your defense is going to be suspect, I think people are still going to take that all day long. There can only be one team that wins the national championship, and there can only be four teams in that playoff. And if my team is one of those four teams,
yeah,
I don't care how I
Oklahoma
got there.
Oklahoma was not suspect until they lost all their players in the championship. They did have a representative defense for most of the year. If you go back and you'll check, they were greatly improved with their new defensive coordinator. The thing that I'm pointing at is there had been almost no talk of defense for 2.5 hours, and that's a mistake because defense has to improve. It has to improve by tenfold to be competitive in the SEC West. And you're not going to win, games, 52-48. That's not the model for Arkansas football. And I don't think it was the model when Petrino was the coach. And I think if you'll go back, Willie Robinson's defenses, they had sacks. They did some things. Now they might, they were not the worst defense in the SEC. They've got to improve in the secondary. They cannot give up 640 yards in a game. That's what I'm saying. And I think that, that there is merit to what you say, John. But I do not want to leave behind defense because that has to improve.
It is important.
Morning Rush brought to you by Crabtree RV in Alma. They're celebrating their 70th anniversary by hosting the Greater Fort Smith RV Boat and Outdoor Show. This is easy and convenient to get to for everyone in the River Valley and Northwest Arkansas as well. You'll be able to check out travel trailers, fifth wheels, bass boats, ski and pontoon boats, as well as great deals on golf carts, mowers, side-by-sides, four-wheelers, outdoor clothing and equipment. It's all going to be there at the end of the month. Parking's free. Admission is free. So no cost to you to enjoy this show. It's January 31st through February the 8th at the RV Boat and Outdoor Show at Crabtree RV in Alma. That's Crabtree RV in Alma, their 70th anniversary where your family's dreams come true.
And I think it's a good discussion to have, and I'm glad we had it in talking about the importance of both sides of the ball and which one's more important and not. And again, you've seen championships won different ways with different players, with different styles. It just happens. I mean, Ohio State won the first college football playoff game with their third string quarterback, running a particular offense. And no one thought that they'd beat Alabama, but they did. I mean, these things just happen in college football, and it's about matchups, it's about playmakers, and it's honestly about just what coaches can do and putting their players in position to be successful game in and game out. And if you can do it with great defense, there's one way to do it. If you can do it with great offense, there's one way to do it as well. It's just with this day and age, it's very difficult to have both. But Clemson and LSU, both teams in the national championship, they both have great offenses. They both have solid defenses as well. It's going to be about which team scores more is going to win the championship. I know that's crazy for people to think, but that's the points? Way it's going to be.
Points decide the winner?
Points decide the winner in college football.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.